This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Oh, wait, I know this one. The fifth element is love. I solved it. Where's my fifth game?
It's not being made, Ashwood. Fifth game that died in 1983.
Beans.
I mean, Ashwood, we all know you have to find the first dungeon and the first clue for Innovative Online Industries. And at that point, it will lead you on a quest to discover the end of the six. No, not the Sixers. God, what is that guy's name? Damn it. If my brain could work, this would have been a funny bit. Anyway. Who was the guy from Ready Player One, the CEO? I can remember the company name, but not his. What the hell?
It's like, I remember the Terminator is a T-800. Just like you knowing the name of the group that whose job in the Terminator series is to reprogram other Terminators to work for the Resistance.
Yeah, everyone remembers Joe Connor, for sure.
You know what would be super helpful for remembering all this information? A manual of some sort.
Yeah.
Just a reminder, this is a spoiler-heavy podcast. Different series that require a spoiler warning will be in the description.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Gaming Theater Podcast. On today's episode, we're going to take a look at the lost art of manuals and strategy guides. And when I mean art, sometimes these manuals and strategy guides actually are kind of artworky. And I'll explain more of that and how they do these things as we go. But in the meantime, before we get started, I wanted to introduce several guests that we're going to have today. And over to my right is going to be...
Sup? My name's Dean Dane. I stream on Twitch. I do D&D stuff sometimes. Play video games. I like charity. Hi.
Hello. Like charity?
I like charity. I do.
Oh, that's true.
If you don't like charity, I don't like you. That's my, antagonistic Dane today.
Yeah. All right. And over to Dane's right is going to be...
Hi, I'm Ashwood Audio, WG Ashwood for short, and I am a Twitch streamer. I'm your fancy-focused charity host, and I'm here to have a good time and talk about strategy guides.
And over to their right is going to be...
Hi, I'm Brandon, also known as Tomato Man, and I do video stuff and a lot of gaming, and also I have too many guides and I can't read them. Pictures are nice.
The pictures are nice. Actually, I'll get into that as well. And over to their right is going to be...
Hi, my name's Rob. I'm a student of game design, and I've never bought a strategy guide because I am broke.
And with that being said, let's take a quick trip over to the Magical Merch Booth.
Wow!
Here we are in the Magical Merch Booth, and today's Magical Merch Booth, speaking of charities that Dane likes, we actually do support different and various charities. Typically around November and December, there is a charity event that GTP will host, usually a live stream of possibly a Dungeons & Dragons game, where we've done that a couple of years, or maybe a stream, or some various other things. We haven't gotten the plan solid, but I do know there's a charity that I want to get started with this, but... My buddy Dane and Ashwood have both done various charities for themselves as well. So, at any point in time, Are you guys sponsoring any charities this in November?
Hell yeah, I think.
Yeah, this November I am actually supporting Extra Life through Dean Dane's campaign. Because if we get him enough money, then he has to get a tattoo. I'm colluding to try and make that happen.
I'm sorry. Yeah, how much do we need?
It'll either be $10,500.
Is that the actual number?
I think you should raise that number up.
I probably should. No, so to go into it a little bit, last year, my amazing community, it was either late November, early December. It's usually around Black Friday, but I think we had to push it into December due to like scheduling and stuff. So towards the end of November, I go live for 24 hours to raise money for the Extra Life Gaming Marathon, which supports the local Children's Miracle Network Hospital here in my hometown. A couple things about that. One, if you're interested in raising money for your local Children's Miracle Network Hospital, you can do that. It's free. Go to Extra Life, sign up. They're not a sponsor, but I super believe in them. This is my 8th year, I believe, doing it. And last year, I was fortunate enough that the adventurers, my community, and I raised over $7,300 for my local Children's Miracle Network Hospital. This goes for life-affirming care for sick kids. This goes to a little bit of, entertainment for them as well. Typically life-affirming care first, but it also goes to like make them comfortable as a lot of these people can't leave the hospital, right? So if that's your jam, come on over and check it out. And I think it was actually $10,000, but I'm considering raising the price because that's real close to $7,300.
You've hit that before.
I have. And
what I will say though is permanent. That's like a 30% increase. That's a pretty big ask as it is, honestly. So if you hit that
10K, I agree. Yeah. Extra Life is an amazing time. People all across the world come and raise money for their local charities. You can support your favorite streamers. You can support other people who are just doing it out of the goodness of their heart. You can join up and do it yourself. It's incredible. Super good. I highly recommend it. Extra Life is the name. Check it out.
Oh, yeah. And with that being said, and we'll have links for those, and we'll be talking more about that when we get closer to some of our charity time frames. But with that being said, let's go ahead and get back to the show. So here we are talking about the lost art of manuals and strategy guides. So let's just sort of paint the timeline on this. Back in the day, but for this definition, let's talk about the 80s and such. When you got a game and you brought a brand new game, it came with a manual. Okay, it came with just a manual to explain things. There was a reason for that. We didn't have the technology like we do now, where we can integrate the manuals and the information into the game. Our second episode, we were talking about this. Games had to be designed in particular with space, and you had only so much space and memory and information that you can store. So anything you didn't have to store has to go through has to be done elsewhere. So they would have manuals to explain parts of the game. There's actually a trope based on this, which is now called "it's in the manual." It's the parts that they explain to you in the game that are in the manual because they couldn't do that in the game for some reason. Fast forwarding away, it's like Resident Evil 1. If you got the manual, you actually had a little dossier. Now, what's cool about that manual is in the back, they actually had a dossier for each of the STARS members on there. Even the ones that you only, in game, you only found like their body, or you bumped into them for like half a second or such. And they improved that in the remake for Resident Evil, but they didn't take away from that. And so like it's how you got some of your weapons is because these guys were carrying them, and you knew that because of what position they took in the STARS team.
Kind of going back to that, manuals of the 80s, that isn't just a technology limitation. I mean, there was definitely a technology limitation. You could only fit so much onto your game cartridge before popping it into your Atari. But part of that was also cultural. Video games back in the 80s were a new thing. What did people do before video games? They did board games. What did board games have? They had a manual, because that's how you learned the rules of the board game. And for a lot of times, it wasn't even that. You were just kind of expected to, like, you know, I don't know how to play chess, so I'll get a friend to teach me. That's how you learned how to play chess. And so a lot of game designers back in the day sort of viewed it the same. How do I play this video game? You get someone who already knows how to teach you. Except that's not super, that's not working out super great, because video games don't have 1,000 years of history and 1,000,000 people that already know how to play them. You've got to include a manual.
Ooh, I can't wait for someday when we do have 1,000 years of experience with video games, though.
Mm-hmm. I will have known them all, and I will trade you all. And there's going to be at least one game where I teach you wrong, because I wasn't paying attention to that one that much.
Well, I mean, that actually is an issue that we run into with game design now. People really hate tutorials if you've already played similar games before, because I don't need to learn to move the left analog stick to move. I've already done that in 1,000 different video games, but not everybody has played 1,000 different video games, so we still kind of have to include it. So including those instructions without making it tedious and boring for people who already know is part of the design challenge.
Now, mm-hmm. I will state that there are some games who get clever with that and use the tutorial as a means of setting up your general UI settings. So like you said, with the analog stick for moving your camera, they'll be like, okay, look up. Well, whatever you instinctually do, it'll choose that as your setting, whether you want it to be invert or standard. So like if you were to press up when they told you to do that, then, oh, the camera's going to move up. But if you'd press down, it's still going to move up, because it's just setting your game settings for you then. And I think that's a clever way to do that.
That actually is pretty smart.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I'm just sort of a weirdo when it comes to this sort of thing, but I honestly really kind of enjoy a tutorial. Sure, I understand that for a lot of people it's annoying because they've played a video game before, as have I. But honestly, I view it kind of like filler, and that it gives me a different view into the world. Filler in TV shows, that is. It gives me sort of a different view into the world, right? This tutorial, sure, okay, I don't need a... I mean, it depends on the length, right? If I get a 10-minute tutorial or a 15, 20-minute tutorial, that maybe is a bit much. But just like, here's the controls, do them. Grats, you did it. Good job. On to the story with you. That doesn't bother me at all. I think that, you know, it is good for us to remember that not everybody is at the same level of skill as everybody else, and they have to kind of plan, game designers have to plan for the lowest common denominator. You know, the person brand new off the bus who got an Atari Game Station for Christmas or what have you.
I also wanted to, since we're still on tutorials, I also want to note that even with more modern games, a in-game tutorial isn't always going to teach you everything you can do in the game. I did a full playthrough of... I'm going to bring it up again later because it's going to be very pertinent for the manual thing. at least from my experience, a full playthrough of Resident Evil Dead Aim on my YouTube channel. And we're on, my friend and I are on the last boss and we're trying repeatedly, and something comes up on screen. It says, it pretty much says, like, after I think our fourth death or something, it's like, don't forget to dodge. And it's like saying, press this button, not naming the button, but saying the action button. And my friend and I are just like, wait, what? That's a thing? And sure enough, we mash the buttons on the controller during a certain, like, attack it's doing, and hey, we dodged. We're like, okay, I don't know how that happened. We open up the manual, go to the controls. Sure enough, it's separated, like, paragraph separated. To dodge, press the action button. Like, I hate you. But at no point in the game does it explain this. So it's even, you know, in more modern games, a manual can be very handy for some people because it'll tell you the more intricate controls or more niche controls or some of the functions that you may not naturally encounter through the game. Because, I mean, we had to mash the controller because it didn't specify what the action button was.
I mean, yeah, that's honestly is just poor game design, because dodging in a combat game is like the second most important thing you can do next to attacking. So that's something that probably should have been explained to me.
I'll clarify even further. This is a first-person light gun game.
Okay.
So...
I can understand now why that might have been confusing.
Yeah, you move around in third person, but when you hit the trigger on the light gun, it puts you in the first person, and then you shoot the stuff on the screen.
Was this Time Crisis?
No, this is Resident Evil Dead Aim. It's for the PlayStation 2. It has... the manual
that's wild,
and the packaging, and the game is hot trash, but it's like the best kind of hot trash because it's enjoyable, even though holy crap, this is certainly a thing that happened.
And we'll get back into the tutorials when we get closer to the end after the manuals, because there's a thing with those. But going back to this, one of the things that people experience is that certain parts of the game is only explained in the manual for one reason or another. We discussed this slightly in an older episode with our friends from Collateral Gaming and Collateral Cinema, because what happened is that we ended up talking about E.T., the Atari game. Turns out, it's not as hard as people think. However, most of the instructions are in the manual. And even back then, a lot of people just got the cartridge and you called it a day. And so you didn't get the manual with that. You just got the cartridge. Here, go play. Yeah, it's still good, right? But without that manual, it doesn't explain 90% of what's going on in the game, which is why it's one of the reasons why it's a really, really hard game.
Yeah, like and honestly, even into like the 16-bit days, I still remember as a kid, you know, renting a game from, you know, the video store or whatever, and it not including the manual, or buying a used game from a store and it not including the manual, and being extremely confused about what I was supposed to do, because what I was supposed to do was explained in the manual.
Mm-hmm. That's how I ended up only having to get, like, an extra extension when I rented. Back in the day, when video game rentals were a thing, I ended up renting Metal Gear Solid, except they only gave me the first disc of Metal Gear Solid.
No, it gets worse than that, though.
Metal Gear Solid, for those who don't know, for the PlayStation 1, is a two-disc set, and there's a special Kodak code you need to switch from disc 1 to disc 2 as part of a puzzle, and the instructions for that are only in the manual.
So that's not even in the manual. It's on the back of the package. So even if you rented it and you got the manual, it didn't do you any good. You needed the back of the CD case.
Which is funny, because Blockbuster, you'll know if you got an official Blockbuster one, because they sort of quickly typed it in on the back of that their Blockbuster case, but only for the Metal Gear games.
Mine didn't do that.
Yeah, you always run the risk whenever a disc, or whenever a game had multiple discs or what have you, you always run that risk of, you know, renting it, buying it, and the disc be missing. But almost more egregious, weirdly, is not having the manual. I don't know what it is about not having the manual, but for whatever reason, that just drives me up the wall. There should be a manual. There should be a manual.
Mm-hmm. So let me explain something a little different back in the day, which is kind of a fun thing. One of the things that brought me into this is two particular games, which I have their manuals for, which were just kind of fun for it. So the first one, back in the day, for the especially for computer games, they still had an issue with computer game piracy. But how do you not get these games running around without people, you know, trying to crack that and get through them? What they would do is they would, if you bought the game wholesale, you should also have the manual. So to get to the parts that play in the game, you would have to have the manual, because it'll get to a port or edition of the game, or even at the beginning where it says, "Put in this word from page 267, or sorry, page 26, paragraph 3. What is the fifth word of that sentence?"
I was gonna say, you were reading some crazy big manuals, my guy.
Carmen Sandiego did that, but it wasn't with a manual. It was with an actual real-life travel guide that came with the game.
Let's go.
Here's the thing. They didn't always give you the correct edition. So when I was a kid, we bought the game. We had the travel guide, but it was like 5th edition instead of 4th edition or whatever. Mm-hmm. So all the words and pages were wrong. And when the game asked you to identify the word, you couldn't. Of course, this is also back when computers were easier. And my sister, who was absolutely not a computer genius, was able to hack into the game to find the list of approved words so that we could use that.
Ah, yes, the command prompt.
That's one way around it. There was a funny thing with that. There was a game, this is back in the day, there was Railroad Tycoon 1. The original Railroad Tycoon had a page number and a picture of whatever train that, of a train, and you had to know the model of that train in order to pass. Okay? Now, it's crazy. However, back in those early days, little Pequeño Leo didn't know these things. How didn't have a manual because we got ours always third hand from a PC games from not even a second hand store, like a yard sale, and hope for the best. But what my dad did get me was a binder full of different sort of schematics from different trains. So I got a 1 in 10 shot of knowing which train was going to be on there from another book to get that right so I could play Railroad Tycoon. It's not until the 90s and later when I figure out how to actually play Railroad Tycoon. I'm like, oh, I got into this game. Well, I don't know what I'm doing. spent all my money trying to build up different postal workers so that way it came with a sheriff's office so in the event someone would catch people who keeps robbing my trains. Railroad Tycoon is a crazy game sometimes. but it's not the only one. Probably one of the more famous ones is Monkey Island series. And it's integrated into the Monkey Island games itself. There's always going to be a puzzle somewhere where there was a thing called Dial a Pirate, where it was actually a, within the manual, you also got a little, not a codex, it's called a Caesar cipher. So for those who don't know, a Caesar cipher is basically you have one ring full of different letters on it and a separate ring that's a smaller ring with a bunch of different letters, okay? And there are 26 letters on one side, 26 letters for the alphabet. Now what you do is that somebody, let's say Ashwood, happens to have a little note and he wants to send me this secret note. In that note, there's going to be some kind of key phrase or keyword in there to tell me which letter from disc one and which letter from disc two I need to match up, and now I can cipher these, decode the rest of the whole thing. That's in a pirate game.
Well, yeah, how are you going to find my buried treasure if you don't have my Caesar cipher?
Exactly.
You buy a box of Cracker Jacks and use the ring.
Nah, that's a decoder ring. That's a different thing. You don't need that for pirates. That's just a ring. But yeah, it's called a Caesar cipher because that's what Julius Caesar and other Caesars used a lot to send decoded messages to each other. One general will have one of the rings, but the command back in Rome will have the other side of the ring. So even if they get robbed by bandits, you got, well, a note and one ring, but without the other one, you can't do anything with it. It's a neat puzzle. There's Dial a Pirate. There was the, you had to make a concoction of some kind of potion in, like, I want to say it's Monkey Island 2? But somebody spits on the formula, so you can't actually read the formula. So in order to get that formula correctly, you have to, there's a printout for it in the manual. Another one I know of is Space Quest, I think it's 6? You have to rewire a communicator device, but the instructions on how to do that, again, are in the manual. Or you can be like Leo, who just hard-pressed every combination until he got it right.
You brute-forced that?
I brute-forced that.
Oh, wow.
I've got, in my repertoire, if you're asking me about point-click adventure games that I have played, it is vast, quite vast out there. The ones I've beaten is quite small. Very, very minimal.
I'm trying to remember because it's been many moons, but I'm pretty sure Civilization 1 did something like that.
Yes.
Where where partway through the game, they would ask you a question that could only be answered from a manual. But I liked the way that they phrased it, because it was basically presented to you as, your people suspect that you are not the true king. In order to prove that you are truly the ruler of these people, show us your knowledge from the manual. Because, you know, you could only be the true king if you bought this game legally.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was delightful.
It was. Also, I think they had weird questions for, like, wonders and things that popped up. The thing is that...
Mostly it was actually just knowledge about the game, mm-hmm. which was in the manual. Things like, you know, the skill trees and the technology trees and whatnot. And so it was stuff you could learn just by playing the game enough. So if you didn't have the manual, you actually weren't totally screwed.
Mm-hmm. And that just sort of varies on that. There's some that aren't totally screwed, and there's others that are totally screwed. And then there's some that take it to the nth degree. And by I mean this is like, there was the Angry Video Game Nerd. If you go to his YouTube channel, there's an episode about an Atari game. I'm trying to remember its name, but there was an Atari game that was built with an augmented reality game inside the manual and a series of comics that you got with the entire package if you got this Atari game. It was part of a contest. There was like four jewel encrusted symbols. It was like a crown, a goblet, and like two other things. But they were it's an old RPG, one of the few of them, for the Atari. And if you could find that, then you would have clues from beating the game, and then you had to get clues from the manual itself, and look for other clues that are hidden inside a comic that came with the package, and all those clues together would let you decipher a phone number to call a special hotline to get to Atari's that's reserved on Atari's headquarters to be signed up for a competition and to pre-reorder the next game of this series. There's four games in that series. The thing is, there's supposed to be a fifth game on it, and all the four games are titled off of different elements: air, fire, water, earth. And if you get through all those, then you have to solve the ciphers from each one of those games to get a chance at the championship, which was going to be held in Atari's headquarters. They had it all planned out. The sword is real. They had all the trinkets and treasures, except after game two, the company goes under. And so they cannot finish it.
Oh, wait, I know this one. The fifth element is love. I solved it. Where's my fifth game?
It's not being made, Ashwood. That fifth game that died in 1983.
Beans.
I mean, Ashwood, we all know you have to find the first dungeon and the first clue for Innovative Online Industries. And at that point, it will lead you on a quest to discover the end of the Sixers. God, what is that guy's name? Damn it. If my brain could work, this would have been a funny bit. Anyway. Who was the guy from Ready Player One, the CEO? I can remember the company name, but not his. What the hell?
It's like, I remember the Terminator is a T-800, and there's also a variety of different, like the name. This is like you knowing the name of the group whose job in the Terminator series is to reprogram other Terminators to work for the Resistance.
Yeah, everyone remembers Joe Connor, for sure.
You know what would be super helpful for remembering all this information? A manual of some sort.
Yeah, true, true.
I don't need this.
Rob, if you have a manual for life and you have not shared it with me, I'm going to be very upset.
I do, but it's from the internet, so its validity is in question.
Just so we're clear.
Sword Quest. That was the name of the game.
Sword Quest. Because you're questing for the sword.
Yeah.
My God, how deep does this go?
Not that far.
Two games, at least.
Yeah. It was built around 1980, and it was designed for a four-game series that was that had hidden clues and things inside a manual. And yeah, there's a mini doc that the Angry Video Game Nerd did about that. It's actually really good. It's really cool about that. So take a look if you get the chance. But not here to talk about that one. Now moving on to other manuals. But yeah, so manuals are used as security measures for older games. Some manuals are actually there for instructions. Other manuals have plots and hints of how to get through the games for it. When we get towards the 90s, manuals become, you know, weird crutch where people start using them as a type of that they put information in the manual that's not in that you would not find elsewhere. And probably one of the, at least personally, one of the worst ones for me is learning that in Sonic 3, if you go to the Carnival Night Zone, you can just hit up or down and you can move an elevator.
Hated that so much. Mm-hmm. Because I beat that game four times before figuring out that trick. For those of you who aren't aware, in Sonic 3, there's a stage called Carnival Night Zone, and there are these little floating cylinders. You can stand on top of the cylinder, and when you jump on it, it bobs up and down in the air in response to you jumping on it. But you can also just stand on it and press up or down to make it move up or down in the air. And there's a point in the level where you are trapped in this tiny little room, and the only thing there is one of these floating cylinders that you're standing on and a pit below it. And you have to get the cylinder to move down far enough that you can go through the exit that's located within the pit. But there's no in-game description of that. Nothing in the game tells you that you can press up or down to move these cylinders. And the intuitive thing to do is to jump on the cylinder to get it to move up or down, because that's, you know, when you first land on one, that's what happens. Oh, I jumped on the cylinder. It started bobbing up and down. I must control it via jumping. So I would spend, you got a 10 minute time limit for these levels. And I would spend a good 8 minutes of my 10-minute time limit just trying to get this one stupid cylinder to move down into the pit far enough that I could get into the little escape hatch. And I did that four times to beat the game before I found out the truth that it was actually the super simple thing that you could do. In case you can't tell, I'm still mad about it 30 years later.
But yeah, so like, there's things like that are just in the manual that they don't explain to you elsewhere in the game. For some reason, like, they'll never, it's fine. One of the meanest ones is if you don't have the manual for, and apparently Sega does this a lot. The other one is X-Men, the original X-Men game. Cause, there's a stage in there. It's like, I think the fifth stage or such. The game itself is really, really hard, but on the fifth stage, you go to Mojo's lair. And when you beat Mojo's lair, the whole thing is going to destroy itself. There's a note in the manual to explain that you're going to read a note in that section, because they say you have to do something to redo the world. So the thing is that what they don't tell you in there, but it is partially explained in the manual, is if you beat Mojo's lair at the end, and this was a problem for a lot of emulators, you have to hit reset on your Sega Genesis, because if you don't hit reset at that point, it will reset the whole game, gives you the opening sequence again, and then starts you on the sixth level, and that's what gets you out of Mojo's lair. So picture this: you've already beaten one of the hardest games out there, you're on stage 5, and it's asking you, hey, turn this off for a second. And like, And there's nothing to tell you. No, it's and you don't have the manual? Nope. You're just, let's hope you thought ahead that meta into there.
Yeah, I mean, and it's sort of, it was in there for a similar reason to that whole the word, number 7 word on page 6 of the manual. It was a way to protect the game from being pirated. It was just a more a heavier consequence way, a harder to figure out way. There was another game, and I'm trying to remember the name of it. It was on the Sega Genesis. And basically, you fell into this jungle, and you had to find your way back to civilization. And it was it was like the side scroller Prince of Persia style game, but it was
Out of This World. Sci-fi.
What's that? Yes, Out of This World.
Mm-hmm.
The second level after you got out of the jungle, you were in the sewers of this city, and there was a ledge that was too high for you to jump up and grab. And the way that you were supposed to do it was you were supposed to run towards the ledge and then not press anything. And your character would automatically make the leap. And it would only happen on this, basically this one very specific part of the game. Every other part of the game, if you wanted to jump onto a ledge, you had to hit the jump button. So, of course, I spent hours trying to make that stupid jump and never being able to figure out why, because I rented it from Blockbuster and it didn't come with a manual.
Blockbuster's going to sound like a curse for most of this episode. I'm just going
to
level.
Kids have no idea how lucky you are these days that you don't have to deal with the BS that is Blockbuster.
Oh, I mean, take it a step further, just to include Blockbuster and other companies like Blockbuster on that, right? Like, you would rent a game, and if you didn't have a memory card or a memory device that you put into the console separately, mm-hmm. you would not be able to save your game. There were many a time where a young Dane continued to play one level of one game over and over and over again as he rented it from a place like Blockbuster or mm-hmm. wherever, and wasn't able to save. He didn't have a memory card at the time, so he played until the rental was up, then he returned it, and then he rented it again, played until the rental was up. I mean, that's a topic for another day, but those have also gone the way of the dodo, similar yep. to manuals. I'm more mm-hmm. sad about manuals, obviously, but...
There is something I did thought was interesting for it. Back in the day, Earthbound, when that first came out, it was one of the first games that you could get a special edition for. So here's a little sort of trivia on how Earthbound, how do I want to put it? Nintendo didn't trust Earthbound to be a big success here. So much so, they thought Earthbound was too complicated of a game. So you could buy, the Earthbound was priced at something like $80, $90, which is 1990s monies, which is expensive as hell. However, what it came with was the official strategy guide for the for Earthbound. So you could play it like the normal way that you can do that, or you can just use the strategy guide and wiki your way through the whole thing. But it came with that because I guess they didn't trust us to be able to like figure it out the rest of the game. It's not a hard game. Earthbound is not that hard. In the grand scheme of RPGs, it is on how difficult RPGs can get, because some can get crazy. No, Earthbound is not that tough. But there is one that I wanted to bring up, speaking of guides like this. There's other guides out there that kind of take it to an extra level. Do you guys remember Legend of Mana?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Or no, Secret of Mana, the original one.
I remember that even more.
Okay, so the Secret of Mana... There is two different strategy guides that you can get. If I don't remember who makes them, because there's like an unofficial company that makes them and an official company that makes them, but one of the strategy guides is written out like a diary. So stage one is just, here's the diary of, this is the area that I was in, this is, and it's from a first person point of view from the main hero, and he's just writing these notes on this, and you're just reading it like somebody's reading through somebody's diary. But what it is a wiki to explain how that game, how to beat these bosses and how to get through this game. Similarly, Nintendo Power magazines used to have like sometimes their official comic version. For Link to the Past, they had a big old comic series, a comic for Link to the Past. The thing was that if you read it, it was almost a step-by-step guide of how to get through the wiki, of how to get through the game. One of the reasons why I wanted to bring this topic up is because I'm not certain if you guys know, Fallout 2 is one of my favorite games. I kind of bring it up every so often.
You've never talked about it ever, actually.
First time hearing about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, that's a thing that's happening. So one of the things I loved is I have the manual for Fallout 2. So the manual is written to look like one of those old composition, like, spiral notes from school. And in fact, it actually has the multiplication tables. And I actually did use that manual once because I needed to bake a cake, but I didn't know the conversion rate of how to get a cups to a, or I couldn't find my phone, but I found my manual, so I used that. Also, unrelated, there is three recipes in the back of that of the manual for Fallout 2. However, the opening to that is a diary written from the main character of Fallout 1, because Fallout 2 starts in a village that he finds at the end of, that he discovers that he creates with a bunch of other vault dwellers at the end of Fallout 1. And that's a spoiler for you. However, if you've ever beaten Fallout 1, which at the time I did not, it is a step-by-step instruction of how to get to where you need to go to find all the stuff you need to beat the game. But it's all written as a journal, so it was just a fun read. And I'm like, wait a minute, this is where that water chip is. I know where it is.
Well, and there was a pretty good reason to include that into the Fallout 2's manual, and it's because Fallout 1 had multiple endings.
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of different choices that you could make that would affect the towns. But Fallout 2, it takes place in, and it's not all the exact same territory, but a lot of the locations you can visit were in Fallout 1. And so you could have made a decision that would have destroyed this town, or you could have made a decision that would have made it prosper. And now that we're going back to this town, well, one of those has to now be Canaan. So that's what this did in the Fallout 2 manual, is it explained to you, you may have played Fallout 1 differently, but these are the Canaan choices that have been made so that this version of Fallout 2 is now possible.
Mm-hmm. Now, back in the day, Nintendo Power was a fun little magazine that had, like, it was just there with hints and tips and guides and such. But one of the coolest things, by the way, this is how I ended up figuring out how to beat my Maniac Mansion, because once, like, for like 3 years, there's a section in there that had ask a question. You could, people can write in questions, and whatever's the most popular question would come up with, they'll answer what these questions are for hint guides for other games. Maniac Mansion always comes up like once every couple of months. Somebody's asking a question about that. And one of my favorite things about that is, like, they had, you know, folded up maps inside the Nintendo Power, our magazine. Back when I was a kid and I actually got my hands on some of them, we would take out the map and I had the whole map of Legend of Zelda, the first one, which is a confusing map if you don't know where everything is. But also, it had the map to Maniac Mansion, which let me figure out, oh no, there's a whole lot of this house I haven't been to yet. Yeah, and there had maps to other games, like Simon's Quest. No, Simon's Quest was weird, because they had the maps to Simon's Quest, but only the maps of the castles, but not the map of the world. So it can't tell you how to get there, but it tells you where to do once you're there.
Yeah, I still remember original Punch-Out. You know, you're talking to your guy, and he gives you a little bit of advice on how to beat your opponent. And then little Mac is just like, tell me more, and the response you get is, subscribe to Nintendo Power today! which really upset me, because of course, if you got that game a couple of months after that issue came out, subscribing to Nintendo Power wouldn't do you squat. Those hints were in a previous edition, it's too late now.
You can't back order those, no.
You have to find them at a garage sale.
Yeah. And let's hope that garage sale has the exact one that you need, too. I'm not certain you're aware, there's a lot of Nintendo games.
How many Nintendo Powers could there be? Like, three, at least?
Well, I mean, he's right. At least three. There might be a bit more than that, but there is at least three.
We had a strategy guide growing up for Mario, Super Mario 3. And we would use it to, there was always a like, find the, it was one of those puzzles where once you flipped a card, you had to find the corresponding cards.
Oh, the end card thingamabob. I remember that one. Yeah.
Yeah. And so me and my dad would always use the strategy guide because it had every possible combination in the game where if you flipped a card and it showed you the star was in the third position, it showed you every possible combination for what that meant with the star being in that being there where all the other cards would be. So we could solve the puzzle just by using the strategy guide.
So were you guys basically playing Keep Talking and No One Explodes, but like in the future?
In Super Mario 3, yeah.
Incredible.
Side note, the best way to play Keep Talking and No One Explodes is to print everything out like you have a manual.
Yes. 100% yes.
Do it with a big group, just handle people pieces of the manual, like, I don't know what this is. Oh, wait, I got it on this page. Super fun time.
See, the Mario 3 thing, though, that is absolutely a delightful story. Because what it essentially is it's memory. If you've played that card game, you know, you're supposed to remember which cards were which, and that's how you're supposed to win all the prizes. Screw that. I'm not doing that. I have this guidebook that wrote everything down for me. I don't have to remember squat.
Hell yeah. If you ever try to beat, like, Mario 3 from the beginning to the end, you can get a lot of stuff to go with you, but man, that's a lot. I didn't realize, it's probably one of the bigger of the Mario games.
Oh yeah.
One of the worst ones out there, or at least worst ones that I learned in the future as a problem for future, Leo. Did you guys ever play a game called, and they remastered it, Zombies Ate My Neighbors?
Oh yeah.
Okay, so they came out on limited run games. Zombies Ate My Neighbors is a fun LucasArts game that basically a bunch of classic and fun little monsters from different horror and science fiction movies come out, and you have to stop them. But you have a weird assortment of weapons, like a squirt gun, a pair of a popsicle, a tomato, some dishes that I'm going to huck at this guy. Oh, this holy unk that could destroy everything. a chainsaw, which is fun. This will solve my problems.
Then you got to collect the babies and the cheerleaders.
Uh-huh, yeah. One of the mechanics is that, but the game has like something like 50 levels. It takes a while to get through, which they introduce a mechanic in that thing that I think is weird, but kind of awful. And it's one of two games I've seen that. So you have to go rescue everybody, right? Well, what if they don't make it? Well, there you have to rescue 10 people. Bam. Oh, Bill over there is gone. Okay. You have to rescue 9 people. Your whole job is to rescue these people. But what if they're gone? Rescue as much as you can. That's all we're really asking for. Side note, if you're playing that, play the Super Nintendo version, not the Genesis version, because they gave you a radar. Because it has an L and R button. Without that, you have to go look for everybody on your own. But I digress. The thing is, only in the manual did they explain which monsters are weak to what items. There is something like 30 weapons in the game. You know how bad it is that you see a this giant big-headed Martian that's attacking you, and I'm sitting here hucking tomatoes, hoping for the best, when realistically, I could be throwing, like, I don't know, that bazooka that I could be using. Not hucking tomatoes, that's what I got.
I think I figured it out. I think it's popsicles for vampires, squirt gun for ghosts, and Ankh is for the mummy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the Ankh will work on everybody, so it doesn't matter. It does some good damage. But yeah, no, their damage scales are, you're supposed to have already known in the manual which does more damage to what, and to help you mitigate, so you don't waste your ammunition on things. Didn't have a manual, so I'm just throwing whatever. Chucky doll is coming at me, hucking popsicles. This should solve this problem. Yeah, that was the thing. I'm like, oh, there actually is a weakness scale to this whole game. I don't know. Also, they don't tell you this right away. One of the items that you have is a weed whacker. Do not waste that.
That is for one level and one level only, and you need to save up all of it for that one level.
Because you need to cut down a bunch of weeds. Also, it doesn't work on any enemy. Don't waste it. Just weed whack your way with this thing.
Yeah, that's actually surprising. I did not know that about Zombie Save My Neighbor, and I've beaten it a few times. I basically just assumed that the huge variety of weapons was supposed to represent that we need to grab whatever we can to defend ourselves. That was like part of the storytelling. Mm. I didn't realize every monster was weak to a particular weapon.
But yeah, that's a thing that's in the manual. If you've noticed, when you get games nowadays, the manuals have started to like kind of die off. But that has to deal with how we interact and how technology works. This is where tutorials come in. Rather than having to read a manual for it, just put it in the game for it to teach you how the tutorial works.
Well, and there's a lot of game design reasons for that, but there are really two big ones in my mind. And the first is because of Blockbuster. Because as we've mentioned before, you rent a game, but you don't get the manual to go along with it. So if you're a game designer and you have one of your games being rented for Blockbuster and the kid can't play the game because they don't have the manual, all of a sudden they're bad-mouthing the game to all their friends, and now their friends aren't going to buy your game. So it's a bad financial move to require a manual for your game, because, I mean, even if it's not Blockbuster, people lose the manuals all the time. The other reason, and this is, I think, genuinely the more important reason, people don't read the manual. And not just for games, for anything. Did you read the manual for your microwave?
My microwave?
How about the manual that...
God, no, I'm not a monster.
I'll tell you a manual I did read.
Okay.
That would be...
Having trouble thinking of what I see.
No, Resident Evil Dead Aim, because that's how I figured out how to dodge. And also figured out that they spelled the main character's last name three different ways.
But yeah, I mean, like, you know, you buy a new piece of technology, it comes with a manual, you throw it away without ever even looking at it. That's just what we do. Nobody reads the manual. So if you're going to depend on the manual for people to play your game, what you're actually going to get is people who don't know how to play your game and then rate it badly. Mm-hmm. So instead, it's much better designed to include everything you need to know in the game itself.
I will say, I did read the manual on my motherboard when I was installing that, because that's where the schematics for where to plug everything is. So, So I did read that manual, Rob. Get off my back.
That makes one of us.
The game Tunic actually has a fantastic mechanic where you are putting together the manual to the game by exploring the map and finding hidden areas, and you find pages of the manual hidden throughout. And so you can essentially put it together, and it will tell you, like, it will put together maps, or it will tell you, like, what you need for the next area or what you need against a boss. It's a really stellar inclusion of the game to be able to, like, put together this what looks like an old school 80s video game manual.
That is delightful. That is an awesome way to do your tutorial.
Still, sometimes I think there's still newer games now that have manuals, but they are few and far between now.
Yeah, nowadays, if a game is including a manual, it's because they're trying to induce that nostalgia feeling in you.
And it's working.
It's got me there. I had to get through the Play Online manual for FF11 and make that FF11 work. I have my own nightmare scenarios with FF11, which that is a dark times indeed.
I think Play Online is really just the dark time, because the online integration with Play Online systems, like, I tried playing 11 and I had an absolute hell of a time even getting signed in when I first tried to set that up. And it was all the Play Online stuff that just gave me such a headache. But even well before 11, you had the guide for Final Fantasy IX with all the Play Online codes on various pages. And those, like, 3 or 4 digit codes were like, oh, put this in on Play Online to unlock more information about this segment. And it's like, why am I doing this? Why do I have to do anything else other than look at this page? And as Leo had noted in actually our notes, there's a long running rumor that Square actually pushed for it to be in the guide. And that is actually corroborated by Doug Walsh, who was an alumni from Brady and Prima Guides. who has stated in multiple interviews, including one at Kotaku, and I think even in his book that he wrote about working in the strategy guide industry, that Square said, do it or we take all of your licensing for all of our games from you. And that's when they're like, yeah, okay.
You got me there. One of the reasons why guides and such started dying out, unfortunately, the internet. They're just wikis and things that you can just find. And good Lord, like Stardew Valley's wiki is ridiculously thick. Like if they printed that out as a guide, it's a book.
Yeah, I mean, people would go to GameFAQs or GameSages or GameSpot or IGN for all their guides and walkthroughs and help. And that really started taking over in the late 90s, early 2000s.
How soon we forget our roots, gentlemen. How soon you cast aside the thing that was there for us after guides, but before wikis. I am ashamed that no one has brought up game FAQs. Holy crap, what a website.
Did I not?
No. That was the one he didn't mention it. That was the one he didn't mention. Well, he said a bunch of other ones. He did not say game FAQs.
I think I said game facts, which is game.
Ooh, that's true. Ooh, we might have like a dialect issue here.
No, spelled FAQ.
FAQs. Okay, fair. I heard facts. F-A-C-T-S. That's fair.
But I will also note that
EMP is pronounced EMP. All right.
Yeah.
So, okay, if we're going to go this route, how about the fact that I said Game Sages, which redirected you to Game FAQs?
True. True. That's very true. No, okay, Brandon, you get a pass. But all I got to say is, right?
I don't even want a point. I just want the pass.
The art on Game FAQs, Game Facts, if you will, to some, was incredible. It really felt like you were reading a manual.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were these great scrolling word art that somebody had decided their guide needed to be the standout edition, right?
And the ASCII arts? Yep. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
For the younger audience that may not fully comprehend this, game FAQs was not official guidebooks.
No.
A regular person who was just a big fan of the game sat down and wrote a guide for you step by step. How to beat it without missing everything, unlocking all the secrets.
Yeah.
And you knew you had a good guide if at the very top, the game's logo was made using nothing but like dashes and slashes on the keyboard.
Yeah, that's how you know quality.
Let's also not forget that this wasn't just a guide. It was also technically a manual. Because that's the first thing they would do is give you a table of contents and list how to do this and how to do that and the background of everything. So really, the middle ground for the death of both of them, actually, is the internet.
And, you know, like, we mentioned this a little bit. There was sort of a mid-step in between a guidebook, and that would be the strategy guide brought to you by Spice and Rose.
Primo, that's the real one.
You know? Oh, my God, I know, right? The official trainer's guide, y'all, from Nintendo Power.
It's in such good condition.
Oh, she keeps immaculate condition of her things. It's, I mean, like, there are some like dog-eared corners and stuff, but like honestly, it's,
you sure you should be handling those without gloves?
Probably not. I'm sure they're worth more than me at this point.
For audio listeners, Dane has
thank you, Ashwood.
Dane has provided both the Legend of Zelda official strategy guide. And the Pokemon Trainer's official guide.
Prima's official. $12.99.
Not anymore, sir.
He leafed through them and the pages actually shined.
I would go steep. And do the same thing with a number of my guides, but that's a whole room over.
Sure. Or two. I do think it's kind of interesting, right? Because you know, you had these guidebooks, not strategy guides. In the case. Help me. Word.
Manual.
Thank you. I don't know why. My brain was like, small book. Say small book. And I'm like, no, Brain. It's not. I mean, it is a small book, but that's not the word we're looking for. Have you tried small book, though?
But how about pamphlet? Leaflet?
Small book? Yeah. Manuals. You know, you had manuals at first, and they gave you, like, character bios. They gave you some story bits, some hints, some tips and tricks. and just art from the game, right? I remember Birdo, right? Probably one of the more famous, not strategy guide, there it is again, manual informations where, like, you know, depending on what you were reading, you learn more about Birdo from Mario than mm-hmm. you would have known otherwise. You know,
or the Amano art.
Yes.
From, Final Fantasy. Like, yes. That's the only place you get those.
Yeah.
Back in, like, the day, yeah.
I'm like, this doesn't look like that, but that doesn't look like this.
Yeah, because they Western washed the cover.
I mean, okay. At least it wasn't Mega Man. Let's be real here, though.
Yeah, at least it's not Mega Man
hey,
1. Yeah.
You know what? Dude did that in like an hour, and I can't do that in a week. So
good on him, to be honest.
Good on him.
But you would have these manuals, and then eventually it evolved into a strategy guide, which was, for all intents and purposes, a big manual, right? Big manual, go burr. And then when the digital age came about, and before, you know, wikis and what have you, Fextra Life and whatnot, you had GameFAQs and other websites like it, where regular people, as was mentioned, would write out a strategy guide. And now it's just like you go to Google and you're like, how beat Elden Ring? And it's like, here you go. Here's a YouTube video. That's the new thing, right? Which I don't like as much. I'll be honest. Maybe I'm old man yelling at clouds or what have you.
Yeah.
But I just want to read with my eyeballs. I don't need a walkthrough guide of somebody better than me telling me how to beat it. Just type it out. I don't want to watch you do it. I'm sorry. You work really hard.
I don't want to see how much better you are than me at the game.
No, I just want to understand it and absorb it via osmosis. Like, you're already better than I am. I'm here. That's the point. I just want to be able to skim through a game FAQs or what have you to get there.
And see, that was actually one of the really nice things. Another way that you knew you had a good FAQ, at least in my mind, is if they didn't include any spoilers.
Yes.
Or
if they had a big warning.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, look in the corner of the room, but they don't tell you why. And you're like, oh, what's in the corner of that room?
Like, I'm here for this FAQ because I don't know how to get past this one part in the game. But I still want to experience the game. I still want to be surprised by the crazy plot twist or whatever. I just need to know the solution to this one puzzle so I can get to the rest of the game. So if you wind up on a game fact where they explain, oh, and when they get to the part where this huge spoiler happens, then you do this. No!
The Wolfman is revealed. It's this person. Ah!
Yeah, like, oh, what was it? I actually used the game FAQ for Maniac Mansion when I finally decided, screw it, this is one of those games that people talk about, I need to beat this game, I'm going to do this, and it's not that hard. So I'm sitting there doing this, and the guy who wrote the guide did not put the spoilers in there, but he hinted to it. Like, one of the things is that he goes, if you want to, you can turn on the power to this one room, or don't, and see what you get. Or don't. That seems weird. So, I will spoil this because when I did it, it was an accident and I felt like a genius for it.
Well, and also, Maniac Mansion is how many years old at this point? I think you're fine without a spoiler warning.
Also, writing a guide. We're talking
I'm not writing a guide.
On a podcast.
Spoiler heavy podcast.
That's what I've heard.
So, when you're playing Maniac Mansion, there is a giant, in order to get to the end of the game, you have to find the secret lab. Pretty easy. It's the same dungeon that they put you into. You just have to go to the left. Like, the guys who made this was hilarious, because, like, once the screen pans to the left because you're traveling too far to the left, they just you find a secret lab. By the way, this is still my favorite gag. The word secret is lab is painted on a wall with a big arrow pointing to a door.
How else would you know where the secret lab is?
Yeah, that's how you know. That's how you know it's there. And so the thing is that there is a two locks that you have to unlock. One's a key that's easy to find. The other one is a padlock. Now, here's what you do. What you're supposed to do is you got to go into the restore power to the house. And then restore power to the game room. Inside the game, there's a game called Meteor Madness. And whatever's in that high score, that score is linked to the combination lock, and that's what you put in as the digital combination to get through the room. But you gotta be careful, because Dr. Fred will go in that room and reset the periodically may reset that code for you. So you have to pay attention to a cutscene when it shows up to let you know, hey, he just changed the code, so you can go back, get the code, and come down here and put it in. Or don't reset that. And here's the metagame for that one. By default, score is reset to zero. So you can just go to the box, 0000000 and hit enter.
The password is 12345.
12345? That's the same password I have on my luggage.
But yeah, no, it's amazing. But yeah, a good guide, a really good guide, and this is a hard way to do that, is one that doesn't spoil the game for you. But that is an art to be able to type to explain what's happening without spoiling what's happening, because you kind of need that to know why you need to do that.
Just like the lost art of manuals.
Exactly.
As and see, said at the beginning.
You've mentioned it a couple of times, and I think, yeah, there is something to be said about the artwork in the manuals, but that has sort of evolved separately. Mm-hmm. So, like, the strategy guide has now evolved into the wiki site for the game.
Yeah.
But a lot of games will include, when you buy, like, the special deluxe edition or whatever, an art book.
True.
And mm-hmm. I feel like that's better.
Yeah.
Because, you know, your strategy guide, it had art in it that was really fun to look at, but that was secondary to the guide part. And now instead, I can have an art book that is just dedicated entirely to the beautiful art. And I don't have to have it be interrupted with tips and tricks for how to beat the game.
I mean, we did have a brief period of time where we got both of those things released to us regularly.
So, and
God, we did not know how good we had it.
Yeah, that actually kind of, like, Rob's note specifically about how they kind of got separated really reminds me of a story I have to share because it goes into the downfall of guides. Is Final Fantasy 13's guide, part one, mm-hmm. specifically. Oh,
wait,
man.
Hold on, there were multiple parts to the guide or to the game?
To the game.
Okay.
Not about 13-2 or 13 Lightning Returns.
Yeah, exactly.
If you have a guide that's like, here's half of your guide, subscribe now to get the other half of this.
You say that, I don't understand why, but there were guides for World of Warcraft that came in parts. It exists.
That's scummy as hell.
I'm done.
So, I am one of those proprietors where I will always buy the strategy guides for games, specifically because A, they always had art, always had cool official art in it, and would usually give you a strategy, hence, you know, the term strategy guide, to, you know, defeat bosses, you know, give you the upper hand, at least nudge you in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
Final Fantasy 13's guide, I, for the life of me, spoiler alert, could not figure out what the hell I had to do to beat Cid. So I'm like, you know what? I bought the strategy guide. I'm going to open that strategy guide. I'm going to look. I open it up. I find the page for Cid. It has a cool art piece of, you know, Cid's like monster form. And it has one paragraph on that page describing basically the cutscene that occurred before the fight, and then the very next page is after you beat Cid.
Well, it's so easy. Why? What? Like, it's hard,
dude. I couldn't do it for the life of me, and so I guess what I did. I went online and I went to gamefaqs.com. That one's for you, Dane.
Thank you.
And I found a strategy where the guy said my best time at beating him was 2 minutes and 3 seconds. Jeez. Beat it in 1 minute and 97. In fact, I hit him so hard and so fast, he didn't do his mid-fight transformation until he was at sub 10% health, because I was flying through those paradigms so fast based on that strategy. I was stun-locking the boss out of his second phase.
I mean, the obvious answer here is that when there was only one pair of pages, that's where the, you know, the strategy guide carried you.
Yeah, the strategy guide was like, go. Yeah, it basically said, hey, look, we made a pretty game.
You were so good at the game, you didn't need it. And they were like, when you're ready, you'll know.
Yeah, when you're ready, you'll know that you need to go to gamefaqs.com and find this specific. And this, granted, this is Final Fantasy 13. This is well past, you know, the game FAQ's height. This True. Is like when you start seeing, oh, big major companies like IGN and GameSpot paying people bounties or like hiring specific individuals and writers to make guides for their website which one of my friends has done before. And God, he has a great story about that too, because it was Dark Souls related. So it was really funny. But
we used to have this. I'm sorry.
What's that? A map? The...
Yeah.
What are maps?
World of Atlas. Yeah.
We used to have this. We didn't know.
Which part is that? Which part of the guide is it? Part 12?
Lakeshire and Kargath and Karanos.
So that's guide part
Ironforge, 0.01, outside Stormwind, 0.02. And outside, where is Kargath? I don't remember where Kargath
speaking,
is.
Speaking to your point a little bit, Brandon, about the strategy guides maybe not always including the best strategy or any strategy at all
for difficult parts of
games. I think that's actually a point in favor of wikis today, and like part of the reason why I kind of like them better than strategy guides. Here's the thing about game development. It's really hard to know what part of your game is difficult. Because when you're making a game, you are, if you're a good game designer, playing it constantly.
Yep.
And when you're playing it constantly, you get good at the game. And since you're designing the game, you know where all the little secrets, you know how you're supposed to beat the boss, you know the tips and tricks already. You don't know that your players don't know that. It's hard to understand that. You're not even thinking about it. And if you're a good game designer, you will be testing your games. But even then, it can be hard to tell. If you've got the same testers coming in every week, then as your game progresses, they're going to get better and better at your game. They're not going to see the things that a newer player will miss. But online is being made, it's not being made by the game developers. It's not being made by professional testers who are good at video games. It's being made just by regular people. They know what the pitfalls are because they fell in them. And so they can tell you how to not fall in them.
That's exactly why the first Rayman game is hard as shit. Because they were testing it as they were building it, and that's why the game gets so hard by the end, because they had mastered their own game as they were designing it. So, like, what you said is 100% factual there, Rob, that is what happens, is the game will just get harder the longer it goes on and the more testing is done by the actual developers.
The beatings will continue until morale improves.
The beatings will continue until the game is won.
So that kind of explains the problems with Driver, like with so many people who have played Driver and never gotten past the tutorial.
There's more to the game than the tutorial?
Can you imagine if we had had a manual for Driver?
There's a manual and there's a strategy guide. I've seen the strategy guide to beat Driver, and I'm sitting there going, no amount of strategy guide is going to help you figure out how to drive this car in the garage.
But redirect back onto track a little bit, which is weird coming from all of us, I think. I think that speaks for the reduction of general quality of the strategy guides. And that's why you start seeing people be like, okay, we really don't need this. It's not going to help us any.
Partially. So there's always been sort of a change in how strategy guides work. Back in the early Nintendo days, strategy guides always had a section for memos and notes that you could put in there, which is always fun. And really important if you're playing a password-based save system.
Well, for manuals, yeah, not for guides.
To write that. For the manuals. Well, so manuals come first, then guides come after manuals because you need that help for it. And then artwork books tend to come after about the same time as a strategy guide, was when you want supplemental material. You want the other stuff for that.
Well, of course, yeah. I just meant like that's the downgrade in quality to the strategy guides.
Oh, quality, yeah.
Yeah, because like, oh, this guide is not doing anything, so I'm not going to buy it because it's not going to tell me how to do what I need it to. But yeah, the notes section, I mean, I've even gotten used games where I'll like, all right, let me look at the back of the manual here. Let me flip into the last few pages. And I found some little nuggets in there of people writing their notes of like, oh, this is how I did this. Or, oh, if you do this, there's a secret here. And it's like, you know, that's kind of a cool thing. It's a blast from the past kind of deal.
I remember somebody left a note on one of my in a Mega Man manual that I when I bought one of the Mega Man games, and it says, to get to the end, put this password in there.
Oh. That's pretty tight. Someone did you a solid right there.
For a good time, use this code.
You want to know how to speedrun the game? Put this code in. 8, 6, 7, boom, 5, final 3, boss. 9, 9?
It was, weirdly. Also, once we're about ready to wrap, I've got a gift for Tomato Man.
Okay. Well, actually, we're kind of towards the end of this one. Basically, that's how strategy guides go. The only real thing I wanted to bring up is let us have a moment to bring out any of our manuals and strategy guides that you know, really play to our hearts. I've mentioned a few, and there's some out there that's out there. But I will go last because I didn't think of something for it. But, Nate, you said you had something for
me. Yeah, to read from the good book, page 73, subsection 6. Major encounter, Sid Reigns. This is one of the most enjoyable battles so far, as it pits you against an opponent with a huge variety of attacks and abilities. The confrontation can be broadly divided into two parts, an opening exchange where Reigns rather telegraphs his intentions, followed by a seamless transition to a longer and more dangerous second phase, where you put your knowledge of his behavior to good use, but without on-screen prompts to guide you. For the first part of the fight, look for the following three captions to judge his intentions. Offensive shift. Reigns will use a variety of attacks, including launch during physical combos. Defensive shift. Reigns uses guard to ward off damage and recovery shift. Reigns will remove status ailments and heal himself. Don't panic about this. The chain gauge is your true prize.
I fucking hate that you went and did that. I was... But
there's more. So this is obviously a different guidebook, but there's a lot of information about this fight in this particular guidebook.
That looks so different than the guidebook
I had. I saw
maps. I'm like, there was a picture of Sid and a paragraph.
Yeah. To be fair, right? There were a lot of guides out there in the world. Not all of them were great.
But even that little snippet there, it's like, that sounds exactly like all that was said, and then it's like, okay, so now you just go left, and it's like, but
you're good, right?
Yeah, this actually continues, like, onto the other page, which is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, huge shout out to the two versions of the Final Fantasy XIII Player's Guide, apparently.
Yeah.
This is the piggybackinteractive.com. Also, this is when, the digital age was printing books.
Yeah.
And it could happen to you. God,
there's just so many of them too, because there was Versus books, there was Double Jump, mm-hmm. Prima was a big one. One that's way less common is called Cybex.
They didn't do a ton, did they?
No, they really didn't. Finding any information on them was rough because I started digging. It was a whole different rabbit hole I jumped into. But man, there were a lot of official strategy guides from that they were licensed out to so many different book companies between like 1999 and 2002. And then it started getting bottlenecked to where companies were only allowing a couple of others to make guides. And then it got to where they were only allowing one. So you'd have the unauthorized guide and then you'd have the official guide.
Yes.
Oh my God. The unauthorized. That's a core memory.
Mm-hmm.
You're welcome.
I got the unauthorized. I had one of the unauthorized guides to some game. I forgot which one it was. I just remember it was full of crap.
Not authorized.
It was unauthorized for it. I'm like, okay, it was an RPG. I want to say it's one of the Fallout games, and it was full of crap. Because what it was, no, it was for Fallout 2. I read it through it, and it was introduced. It was like, yeah, you should be able to get this one of these items, and at no point. They told me that the Holy Hand Grenade of Antioch is in the game. I know that. I don't know how to get it. They're like, yeah, you could just get it. And? Yeah. Because you have to get it before an encounter for it, but they don't tell you where it is. Just, it's there. It's in the game somewhere.
Leo, you saying that it's full of crap just gave me a core memory from recently. So we had manuals, now we have the main strategy guides, now we have wikis. Well, now we've got crap guides to things like Monster Hunter and D&D. Shout out to Jughead.
By the way, until I started playing more D&D, that is a hilarious thing. I'm like, I got it. I was there.
So crap guides to D&D are great.
They're fun.
Leo mentioning the not knowing where the hell that item is reminded me too that I also put a note down for Digimon World 2. Because the guide specifically says you can get the secret Chimeramon in the game. Wait till a little bit later to find out more. And no, you can't. Because
we determined that was a lie.
So it is and it isn't, because it's in the game code. They even had like a screenshot. But the thing was, you had to use the Pocket Station in Japan on the Japanese version in order to get it. the character that you talk to initialize this is removed from the US version because the Pocket Station never came out here. And I'm guessing that due to lack of communication with the guide writers, they never learned that they weren't going to put an alternative method for US residents to get the creature. But if you slap in a game shark, you can get one at level one.
It's not a bad deal.
That's not
well, I mean, in all likelihood, it's because multiple people were translating that manual, and the first, you know, the person in charge of like page one or wherever that was like, oh, awesome. I can't wait to find out how I get this. Anyway, I'll go ahead and translate it for you. Yeah.
But that's just like, you know, an example of poor communication. And it's like, boy, you know, if you guys had talked about that, maybe not put a note about this thing being a secret encounter in the game that you are not able to access legitimately.
They needed a manual for the manual.
I mean, yeah. I mean, they teased everybody with that guide because it's like, I mean, me being, what was I at the time? 10. It's like, how do I get that? And then I was like, oh, I have a Game Shark. I don't care.
But yeah, no. If you're curious how crappy that manual of mine for Fallout 2 was, I found items that are not in the book. This is a manual that should have everything in there. I somehow found some super cool armor. Where was it? And this is just in a town. You have to have a particular conversation. You don't tell me nothing. I'm out of here.
Oh, man.
Nuts.
It was a simpler time.
So, Skies of Arcadia Legends strategy guide is missing a chest.
Yep.
Because my friend followed that guide, and he never got the unlock for opening every chest in the game because it's literally missing a single chest.
Didn't there used to be a show called Achievement Hunters, which is how to get other achievements?
It's a video show, yep.
Yeah.
YouTube.
Like, this sounds like this whole thing is up their alley to try to find all the achievements for things. I just remember one FF game. I can't remember which one it is. I want to say it's X2, but you have to have a dialogue with everybody in the game. If you miss one person, you're out.
Yeah.
Sounds about right.
But yeah, unless we have anything else, I just want to kind of spitball a couple of fun little manuals and things that sort of tickled my fancy from back in the day, right?
Let's go.
Let's do it. And if you got anybody else wants to jump in now. But the one that popped into my head is Star Tropics. They don't explain, in the manual, they actually put a note in there to tell you, when you're in the first area, talk to everyone. Talk to every single person in there, because if you don't, you can't play the game.
Oh, man. Well, I've got one that I think Dane's going to appreciate. It's the Final Fantasy VII manual, actually. Simply because of their character bios. Cid is a tough-talking, warm-hearted old pilot. And he is a whopping 32.
Yeah, oh, the character ages in old manuals are hysterical.
Their heights and weights are hilarious in some cases.
Guys, I could have been an astronaut.
Yeah.
At this age, looking as I do, I could have been an astronaut.
I could have been a grizzled old pilot 3 years ago, Dane.
Yeah, more than three for me, my friend, but I feel you.
So this one is, I never bought strategy games as a kid, or strategy guides as a kid, because as mentioned, I was poor. Mm-hmm. But I do remember kind of a core memory from when I owned a Nintendo 64, and we had rented this hover car racing game. I had to look it up. I think it's called Aero Gauge, but don't quote me on that. Anyway, in the manual, which I bothered to read, in one page, it was talking about a secret strategy that you could use to get a boost at the very beginning. And then said, but you'll have to figure that out on your own. And then on the next page, they said, in order to get a boost at the very beginning, hold your brakes and then hit the gas button as soon as the light turns green.
Okay, well, which is it?
That's not a secret.
Hey, you figured it out on your own, though, because you read the next page.
I'm mad for young you.
No, I mostly found that more amusing than anything else, but it's still, like, in my head, I still think every now and again, that's not a secret, bro. You can't just tell me and it still be a secret. It doesn't work that way.
That's it's like going up to someone saying, "Hey, you want to know a secret? Chickens go cluck."
No, he's right.
Yeah, it checks out. Oh, I remember one manual. I was doing research for our Mega Man episode with Adam from the X on there, and we were talking about it for a second, and it's on the episode. In the manual, they tell you Mega Man can duck. Mega Man can't duck.
Wait, which Mega Man is this?
1 through 6.
The slide didn't come in until much later.
Right, no, I just wanted to know which manual was saying that, so that way we can
scoff. The first one.
Okay, we're going to scoff really hard then.
Yeah, Mega Man 1, and then they added also in Mega Man 2, somewhere that, yeah, you could duck. There's no duck function for it, and this isn't one of those mistranslation things. It's not in the game, either version, so either that or in the Japanese version. There's no ducking on that.
Well, they're not going to just give it away to anybody. You know, they got to make sure you're worthy.
Yeah, you didn't beat Duckman?
If we're talking Mega Man 6, I'd give you a pass, because I'm pretty sure that's the first instance of a dash ability where you could slide under stuff. But, and you could say, oh, well, he ducked maybe there, but no. Mega Man 1? Wrong.
So, if you want a weirder version of that, Flintstones for the NES game. They actually tell you in there, you have a duck button. It's not a duck button. You hit down, and Fred Flintstone will stick his head and tuck it in his shirt. He just tucks down.
That's not a duck button. That's a turtle button.
That's a turtle. You just turtle it up a little bit. So your character's your sprite is dropped by, like, you know, 2 pixels and calls it a day.
That'd be great if your hitbox didn't change.
I think you'll find it's actually a dinosaur button. They didn't have ducks back then.
Yep.
It's a pterosaur button.
Pterodactyl button.
All right. What about you, Ashwood? Any other weird manual strategy guides, things of that nature?
No, we only had the one growing up, the one for Mario. And I remember, like, we kept it in a plastic bag hanging on the door to my dad's closet. And it was like every Friday, Saturday night, we would bust that baby out when we needed that puzzle. Mm-hmm. It was just good times with my dad.
Just like, son, consult the sacred tomes. Yes, Papa.
Oh. Behold the sacred text.
And the sacred text says, hit the card top right.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And that's the modern text. It says, get good, scrub.
It's true, too.
Yeah, unless anybody else has anything else. I think that's all the ones I can think of off the top of my head.
Yeah, I'm good.
Bring them back. I want them.
Straight up.
I'm happy with just the art books myself, but...
Give me something to read on the drive home. Not when I'm driving, but when somebody else is.
It's one of the things I really like about limited run games and a couple of those game companies that will make manuals for newer games that are coming out. Just for funsies. If you want them, they're there, but they're hard to press to find. And I think it's easier now to find a vinyl soundtrack for your game than it is to get a manual.
That's true. I will say there are some companies that are producing, but it's usually the company that makes the game is releasing strategy guides for their games. I think Metaphor and Armored Core 6, they had strategy guides that they released, and they were made by Atlas and FromSoft, respectively.
From Software does still have manuals for Elden Ring. I know that, and strategy guides. I know there's a strategy guide for Elden Ring. I've seen it.
What does their strategy guide say? Go get fight good. Big man, dodge better?
No, it says get good, scrub. I read it. It's on every page.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah. It's more of a map, really. It tells you where the things is, not how to do it better at this.
Filled with beautiful artwork of the monsters that will absolutely destroy you.
Yeah.
To get your ass wrecked, go here and here. To get your butt rocked, go here and here.
I want the strategy guide written by George R. R. Martin.
He hasn't finished it yet.
Yeah.
No, he liked video games too much, so he lost a book or two, and those book or twos were the Elden Ring guides.
Unless you got the WWE version, then you got a Booker T. But
it's John Cena.
You can't see it.
That's true. You got me there.
All right. Okay. So with that being said, our next episode is going to be out on... Hi, everyone. This is Leo from the editing room. Just to let you know that our next episode is going to be available on December 5th. And now, back to the show.
Let us know, chat. Do you have a manual you like? Is there a game that you wish had had a manual, or a game that had a manual that you wish didn't have a manual? Let us know.
No. That is a
is there a game that you wish didn't have a manual? Is that what I just heard?
Yeah.
Is there a manual you would like to erase from existence?
I mean, like, some of them are apparently pretty bad.
Yeah. There's a, manuals, maybe not so much. Strategy guides.
No, I guess that's fair. Same. What's a strategy guide if not a big manual? Am I right, chat? Let me know.
Yeah. All right. But with all that being said, this is Gaming Theater Podcast, logging out. Bye, everybody.
Bye. See ya.
Bye.
Gaming Theater Podcast is hosted, created, produced, and edited by Leo Garcia, the Geek Scorpio. Our music is A Drinking Game. Stock media provided by Stormwave Audio / Pond 5. Our cover art is by Adam Parker. You can find him at ParkerGFX on Twitter. If you want to send us some money to help with these episodes, you can do so at patreon.com/ Gaming Theater Presents. Want to send support that doesn't hit your wallet? Please leave a review with wherever you hear your podcasts and share our podcast with your friends. It really helps out. Thank you for listening.